Hello, and welcome to the Tideway Investor Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question-and-answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Mark Sneesby, Chief Operating Officer, and Matthew Duncan, Chief Financial Officer, and Inez Fadden, Treasurer. Please go ahead with your meeting.
Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome, and thank you for joining our call this afternoon. This is Matthew Duncan, the Chief Financial Officer. This is obviously our normal six-monthly update up to the period ending the 31st of March 2019, and I would now like to ask Mark Sneesby to provide an update on delivery.
Thank you, Matthew. So let's get going on slide five on health and safety. We continue with our transformational approach. It's working very well. We haven't had any life-changing injuries, which is obviously our overall target. And our accident frequency rate, which is a trailing measure, is demonstrating that we're doing better than other large infrastructure projects that have gone in the past. That's not to say we haven't had accidents, and obviously one too many. We had six in the period, which were more than 7 days. I say not life-changing, but ones we want to avoid. Our right way approach and our EPIC induction continues and being very successful, and we've got other companies and programs looking at mirroring that sort of approach, which is very positive. And I think with mental health, I think we're all aware of mental health these days. Our Mates in Mind program, which we support, is proving vital. The construction is notorious for its mental health. It's full of blokes, unfortunately, which we're trying to change, but they don't talk, etc. And the Mates in Mind is really working very well. It's probably interesting to note we have 167 mental health first aiders across the project. That's actually more than we have our medical first aiders, which is quite that, I think. Moving on to vision, legacy and reputation. You know, this is key for us in creating an environment for us to deliver against and build friends and reputation for when things don't go as we like. And I think we were really pleased back in autumn last year when we did this survey and got positive sentiment from 92% of our stakeholders, which I think was a fantastic result, more than we were probably expecting. So we continue that programme because it's obviously working and we're getting good support across London. Wanted to talk just on regulation, a couple of key areas. Most importantly probably was the recent consultation discussions with Ofwat about regulatory ring fencing. I think you're probably all aware of this, but it was a potential obligation on companies to maintain an investment grade rating, moving from reasonable or best endeavours to a more unconditional obligation, something we were concerned about at Tideway, and we've lobbied hard with Ofwat to avoid that, and they have confirmed to us that this does not apply to Tideway, so a big success for us, I think, something we're pleased about. In terms of other licence modifications, quite a lot of debate about board leadership, transparency, governance obligations, etc., and we're in discussion with Ofwat on how those apply to Tideway. None of them, we believe, are material to us, and we're progressing on that front. If I move on to our interface with Thames Water, I think this is becoming more important to us. It's always been important, but as we move towards the second half of the project, the interface with Thames Water becomes even more critical to us. We're doing many more tie-ins and connections into their system. They need to ramp up their resources and equipment so they're ready to take over this tunnel and operate it up for us. And we've done a lot of work over the last year to build that relationship with Thames Water. It's pretty good, I think. And one of the key things we've done is built a joint approach document and philosophy, which actually says how we, together with Thames Water, we'll take this project all the way to handover and system acceptance, and it's proved a really good piece of work, a really good document to sort of pull us together and make sure we're all going in the right direction. Something we've shared with Ofwat and DEFRA as well, just so they know where we're going. But pretty much going all right. I think, as you're probably aware, the draft determinations for Thames came out today, and we're busy poring through those to see where we get to on performance commitments. We did work very hard with Thames and with Ofwat to make sure we get the right performance commitments from Thames so they deliver what we need for the project. I mean, we're pretty certain we'll get that, and we're just going through the finer detail as it came out today. Okay, if I move on to on the programme itself, at the end of this reporting period, we were 40% complete, and pleasingly, that's exactly where we expected to be a year previously, which is good news, making good progress. But I think we had a couple of challenges throughout the year, which we have communicated, and I'll go into in a bit more detail a bit later, but that did mean we had to revise our cost estimate from 3.5 billion outturn to 3.8, 280 million increase. As I said, I'll cover that a little bit later on. We are now fully active on 20 of our 21 sites as planned. We have one site that we're not due to be on site for at least another year, at Abbey Mills, but all the other sites are fully active, and if you go through London you can see us all over the place. We are busy working on all of our shafts, and we have started tunnelling. I think in this report we say we've done about a kilometre. We've actually done now 4.1 kilometres as of last Friday, and that was against a target of 3.6 kilometres. So we're ahead of ourselves on tunnelling. It's going very well, and it's about 13% complete as we speak today. I think in line with tunnelling, our Moorby River strategy is starting to ramp up, because as we tunnel, all of those arisings go onto the river and out to landfill sites. And that's proved really beneficial, going back to the reputation piece, but also, you know, taking trucks off the road and creating a safer environment. And we're very pleased about that. I'll touch briefly on slide 10. It's a new graphic we've put into the pack. So it covers all of the sites from Acton in the west all the way over to Beckton Sewage Treatment Works in the east. I won't go into the detail, but basically the more full each column is, the further progress we are through it. So you can see we're starting to fill up those columns as we go, and progress is pretty good. So let me just go back to our cost estimates. We said at the time, and just to repeat, there were three key reasons why our costs had gone up. Two relating to two particular sites. Firstly, Blackfriars. At Blackfriars, there are two gas mains that run in a service corridor in the river wall all the way along the embankment. And when we looked more in detail at our construction methodology, it was clear that that would pose too much weight effectively onto the river wall, move the river wall, and disrupt the gas pipes, potentially bursting them. And so we have to find an alternative solution. Otherwise, we're going to have to divert them. Divert them meant closing that whole road for about 6 to 9 months, which was just unacceptable. We couldn't do it. It would block half of London. So we worked hard on an alternative scheme, which we've done, working with Cadent Gas, our contractors, City of London, etc. And that's now in play, but has led to a 140 million increase in the cost of delivering Blackfriars. At Kingham Memorial Park, as we were putting in our temporary cofferdam structure, we saw quite a bit of movement in that structure, and what transpired was that the alluvium levels, which is a very weak strata, was much, much thicker than we'd anticipated and much thicker than any site investigation had established, which has meant that we need to strengthen all of our temporary works. We need to do quite a lot of ground stabilisation for the permanent works, and we actually need to change the alignment of the tunnel to take this site off the critical path, which we've done. But again, that's cost us about £120 million to implement with our contractor. Third element is the Moorby River. I mean, that's been going right from the start when we agreed that we would put more onto the river. And again, that's at a cost of £54 million, but I think we definitely think that's the right thing to do. Okay, I'll just touch very briefly on some of the areas, but I've covered most of it. So in West, as I said, we are working on all of the sites in West. They are over 50% complete. It's the area that's most advanced. Both of the tunnel machines in West are actively tunnelling. That's one of the main tunnel A, which goes from Carmouth Road to Acton, and then the small Frogmore connection tunnel, which is also active at the moment. This is an area actually where we're most advanced, and we're actually starting to think about completion and handover and handing some of these sites back to the councils in about a year's time, and starting to do all the prep work for that. So that because they'll be about 70-80% complete sort of this time next year, and moving forward to completion. In Central, again, both the tunnelling machines are operating, and actually they are production rates are higher than we expected, which is really good news, which is a lot down to how the contractors prepared and got ready for doing the work. We're active on all the other sites, and I think if you go through Central London, you can see Central front and centre at Blackfriars and Victoria and the like, and they're progressing pretty well. If I just finally on East, we're not due to start tunnelling on East until early next calendar year, as planned, although both tunnelling boring machines are built, tested and are currently waiting in Rotterdam to be shipped over as soon as the sites are ready for them. We are working on all the sites there, on excavating shafts and building shafts. And I say, as soon as we can get ready, we'll bring those machines in and start tunnelling. We only ever plan to tunnel with four machines at any one time, so the four that are running at the moment. By the time the other two arrive, two of them will have completed, and maybe more, and the other will have four running again. So. And that was all I was going to say on investment. I'll hand over to Innes to talk about finance.
Thank you. So on financing, we had issued some debt in the first half of the year, but there was no more debt issuance in the past 6 months, and we haven't done any new derivative transactions, as you know. So our swap portfolio to date is the 8 first tranches of the EIB loan that we swapped from LIBOR to index link, and we've also swapped 70 million of our 300 million US private placement. Given that we raised an additional 325 million, we cancelled a further 250 million of our revolving credit facility, and is now at 500 million. And even this is an amount in excess of our needs, but we keep it there for the time being. And as you know, the RCF remains undrawn. Coming on to our shareholder funds, our strategy has been from the beginning there will be all equity and shareholder loans will be funded first ahead of any debt, and so the full 1.27 billion shareholder funds were fully injected actually at the end of 2018. We have since repaid a small part of the shareholder loans. This is part of the approved distribution, our license and the discontinuation agreement. And so in March, we've made a restricted payment of £30.5 million. In terms of drawing our deferred debt, we drew our second deferred bond in December, £100 million, and in January, we drew the second tranche of the EIB loan. Actually, in last month and this month, we actually drawn another two bonds and the third tranche of the EIB loan, just done that. In terms of liquidity, at 31st of March, we had $2.5 billion, and this comprises $655 million cash, the RCF, the undrawn portion under the EIB loan, the $700 million we still have deferred purchase bonds, and we have $100 million undrawn loan as well. This is well in excess of our targets and provides enough liquidity to see us through construction and to system acceptance. If you go on to the next page, 21, there's been no changes to our credit ratings in the period, and in March, Fitch published a full rating report for the company. They hadn't done so at license award, and since then they've only published updates, but they decided this was the time to publish the full report, so if you want to see it, it's on our website as well. And as you probably know, Fitch has in the past 6 months applied ESG scores to think 3,000 corporates, and then in the second phase to infrastructure issuers. But this has no change to our credit rating, and I believe to no one other. Coming on to sustainability, we have our green bond framework. We've issued 6 bonds so far, and we have now published our green bond report, and we have updated it. So we're telling investors how we allocated the proceeds and how we're doing in terms of impact. No. And importantly as well, we have mapped... Hello? We have mapped the legacy commitments that we're reporting against. We've mapped them against the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals as well. And if you're interested, our Green Bond report is on our website and talks in detail about that. Still on sustainability, you may have seen it in January 2019, a group of 16 European corporates launched a corporate forum on sustainable finance. There's a number of objectives. One is obviously the development of sustainable finance, but also to give corporates a voice in all the discussions and consultations that are going on this matter. The group has since grown to 21 members, and there's 4 UK members. And another couple of things. So post-year-end, in June and July, we've updated our bond prospectus, and Standard & Poor's has updated that green evaluation for our bond program. And they maintain the score. We still have a 95 E1, and as we believe, we're still the highest or joint highest overall score for S&P Green Evaluations. And with that, I was handing over to Matthew Duncan.
Thank you, Innes. Just referring to the core financials, just to start with the total costs that were capitalised up to the end of March 19. Were circa 1.8 billion, and that represents, and that compares to the figure as at March 2018 of 1.154 million, representing an increase during the period of circa 673 million. The overall spend was very close to actual cost in the period of 670 million versus the cost of 674. So there's very little difference in terms of timing of actual items of spend. If I reference direct costs, in the actual period up to March 19, for the 12 months, we had direct costs spent of 504 million, and that is circa 61 million higher than for the previous 12-month period, demonstrating the high level of activity that we've had over the last 12 months. Just noting that point, reference direct costs, if I now point you to indirect costs, even despite the fact that we've had a lot of activity over the last 12 months, It's quite relevant to note actually that the level of indirect costs in the period were less than for the previous 12 months, demonstrating some of the excellent budget controls and cost-cutting measures that we've implemented over the last 12 to 18 months. Referencing lastly excluded costs, which were circa 85 million in the period, and that largely represents interest payable, which includes interest payable on the shareholder loans. I now point to the next page. If I start with cash flow, the cash as at the end of March 2019 was 555 million, and that is circa 284 million lower than the figure from 12 months ago. Included in the cash flow inflows was 360 million from borrowings during the period, and also worth noting in working capital inflows was 46 million of regulated revenue receipts during the period. If I point then to external debt, the company's borrowings as at the end of the period was 1.898 million, which covers circa 711 million of shareholder loans and circa 1.19 billion of other borrowings. As previously mentioned, the revolving credit facility remained undrawn during the period. And a full list of all the Tideway external debt facilities can be found on page 25. If I then go to the next page, on page 24, just referencing the fair value measurement, It's important to note that there were no swaps executed during the 2018-19 financial year. The actual movement in the fair value of these financial instruments is recognised in the income statement under the remit of IAS 23. That's no change from the approach that we've had in previous financial years. However, during the period, it is worth noting that there was a negative movement of circa 31 million, and the fair value of the index-linked swaps. However, that is a non-cash impact movement, and as I mentioned further, that we have a disregard for that for tax purposes, which means that in the period we have no recognisable tax profit and we have no corporation tax charges during the year. I'm not going to talk to page 25, so the next page worth noting is page 26. We're referencing the financial ratios. Firstly, with the regulatory asset ratio, as at in the relevant test period up to the end of March 2019, that ratio now represents 32.21%. If I point to items B and C, which is the interest cover ratio, at the end of the period it equaled 3.44, whilst the average over the 12-month period through to March 2019 equaled 4.74. All of these ratios are well in advance and better than what's required in our documents and contractual obligations. If I then point to other reportable matters on page 27, the changes during the 6-month period up to March 2019 are noted there in the first column there, which is obviously the change between myself and Mark Corbyn. Post the period end, we have announced the appointment of a new non-exec director, Baroness Ruby McGregor Smith, and there have been no acquisitions disposals, and the swap portfolio was provided in slide 30 a little bit later on. I then refer to page 28 just to confirm that there have been no defaults or trigger events during the period. The borrowing is in compliance with our hedging policy, and all of the items shown in this report and stated in this call today are accurate in all material aspects. On that basis, I'm now concluding the presentation. Would like to hand back to the convener to open up for questions.
If you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. There will just be a brief pause while any questions are being registered. Just as a reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. And we have a question from the line of Holly Cook from Rossby. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation so far. We've talked about the contingency cost overspend of around $300 million. There was also an amount of around $500 million contingency contained in the original base case of $3.1 billion for the project. Can you give any colour on whether that, presumably that's been completely eroded, and can you give any colour on what was the reason for that contingency being used?
Yes, we can. Sorry, this is Matthew Duncan here. Yeah, you're right. In the original baseline model had a contingency of $527 million. That, as is the normal course of action during a project of this scale and size, and obviously with the duration, that covers a whole range of events and risks that are highlighted, which aren't necessarily priced in the individual contracts for the three main works contractors, and is there to cover those risks which are either we expect aren't fully covered by the contractors in their pricing, and also covers risks that we anticipate part of the whole program, which are sit in the client's responsibilities. There have been drawdowns against that £527 million contingency over the course of the last few years, which includes some of the items that Mark mentioned earlier in his part of the presentation. So we, based on some of those drawdowns and the position of contingency that we had at the end of the financial year, it was opportune and sensible to review the remaining risks that we have within the project, reprice those, and take a view as to what we think are the remaining risks and how that should be included in the forecast to complete for the remaining life of project, hence why you've now seen that the actual amount of contingency has increased to above $300 million in the revised outturn price of $3.8 billion.
Okay, thank you.
And as there are no further questions, I'll hand back to the speakers.
Okay, thank you. We sincerely hope that you found this presentation helpful for your purposes. We have this afternoon tried to, I think, given feedback that we've had in past presentations, to give you a little bit more detail, particularly in reference to program and schedule activities. So hopefully that's been of use to everyone that's participated in the call or received the information. As is always the case, we welcome any further questions, and if anyone would like to contact us, please don't hesitate to contact any three of us. And again, we thank you very much for participating in the call and look forward to speaking to you soon. Thanks very much on behalf of all three of us. Bye. Thank you.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.